Napa know-how.
There are lots of amazing cars on the road, but perhaps none more amazing than the paid-off car. It may not be pretty, but the price is right. Heck, if you keep that thing running, it'll actually start paying you. Because with Napa Rewards, for every $100 you spend, you'll get $5 off. So keep your car running longer, stronger with Napa Rewards, and watch the savings start rolling in. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
You are Locked On Cowboys, your daily podcast on the Dallas Cowboys. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Cowboys podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Marcus Mosier of Bleacher Report. You can find me on Twitter at Marcus_Mosier. And as always, I'm joined by the one and only Landon McCool. You can follow him on Twitter at McCoolBTB. You can also listen to him on his show, the How About Them podcast, as well as the Blogging the Boys podcast. Landon, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing good, but we're going to talk about it up front. But I feel like I owe our listeners a little bit of a mea culpa on some of the stuff we talked about yesterday.
I said, that's so off brand, though. That's just not us, though.
Well, that's fine. I mean, it may not be you, Marcus, but I feel like when I make a mistake, I need to make sure that I correct it or at least, apologize
double
for making
down.
A mistake. Yes, double down. So yesterday we talked about how, let me preface this real quick. When we do our especially our first, podcast, the offensive review ones of the All 22, this is not an excuse, but when we get very little time to, first of all, when Game Pass releases the All 22 tape, we get very little time before we actually have to podcast to actually watch the tape. To even get through the whole game is sometimes, especially when you're battling with the beast that is Game Pass, it can be difficult to get through it. Mm-hmm. So usually when we get our All 22 notes, it's our first initial watch through. And then, as we go through the week, we watch the game more than once and we get an opportunity. So, upon my second my second viewing, but again, my relaxed taking my time viewing, not hurrying to make sure I see every play on the All-22 before we talk about it, I really feel like I didn't get a good feel for how much they ended up running wide zone and zone blocking schemes, especially later as the game went on. They started playing it more. And second, and B, or whatever my numbering system was I started with, Jonathan Cooper did a great job. He did a fantastic job.
He had a fantastic game.
I thought he had a really good game either way. But I did think that he did struggle, with his – like he had previously, like we had discussed, getting to the second level and getting his second level blocks in the wide zone. I am here to completely mea culpa that he looked really good there, actually. And I think – the more I've kind of talked about it to myself and, mentioned it to you and bounced it around in my head – The thing I think is different, and I actually think that we even kind of discussed this a little bit about how, it's tough because sometimes you come off late on those blocks, those double team blocks, and he just doesn't have the athleticism necessarily to come off those blocks late to get to the second level in time. What he's doing now is that he's whether he's going to his right and he's passing a double team to Frederick, or if he's going to his right and he's passing a double team back to Tyron Smith on the backside, or whether he's passing it to Frederick on the other side going that way, he's not worrying as much about having to secure the double team. He's trusting his all-pro center and his all-pro left tackle to secure those blocks without as much help from him, and he's focusing more on and just kind of getting a punch and then getting up on the second level immediately. And I think it's done wonders for the timing of everything, and I think it's done wonders for him as well. And I think it all goes back to the fact that you have an all-pro center and an all-pro left tackle, the kind of guy that can do a reach block on DeForest Buckner going on the backside of a wide zone and be able to get across his body, turn him, and then shield him off from the play. Like, I mean, some of the things that we saw Tyron Smith do in this game was unbelievable. And so, yeah, I just wanted to get that out there that I gave you guys some bad information yesterday after a kind of a really brief run through. I will definitely not do that again, so I apologize.
All right. That's good. All great information. I mean, I went back and watched Cooper as well, and I saw the exact same thing. So I'm going to be curious to see how it translates over to this Washington game, because I just don't think San Francisco is all that good. I'm just not sure. Is this a one-game fluke, or is this the beginning of a trend with Cooper? I think that's going to be something that we should definitely monitor in the next couple
of
weeks.
I will say this real quick before we go on the offense. You can say what you will about the San Francisco team. They have got not a great offense. They got a rookie quarterback, blah, blah, blah. Their defense has been pretty decent all season. I mean, they've played tight, played tough against some good offenses, and specifically their up front. Their defensive line is got all the talent that this team has, probably. So I would say that overall it's not necessarily a great measuring stick, but as far as blocking and as far as, like, you know, taking on athletic defensive linemen, this was a decent enough test.
All right, so let's talk about some of these other defenders. I want to talk about Anthony Hitchens a little bit. I went back and watched him, and I looked up this crazy stat. The Cowboys have won 14 of their last 16 games when Anthony Hitchens and Sean Lee are on the field together.
Linebacker wins.
Yeah, linebacker wins. That might have a little bit more to do with Sean Lee than Anthony Hitchens.
Maybe,
because,
maybe.
You know, anybody listening to this podcast knows that I believe Anthony Hitchens is the second best linebacker on this team. But I don't think he played that well in this game. There was multiple times he overran his the gap that he was supposed to take. He still struggles to get off blocks. He might be their second best linebacker in pass coverage, but that's not saying much. I just think he's certainly not playing at the level that we saw him last year. Now, I don't know if that's due to injury or rust or whatever it is, but I just didn't think he played all that well, and they're going to need him to play significantly better in the next couple weeks if the Cowboys want to improve their defense. What did you see from Anthony Hitchens in this game?
I mean, I definitely agree he didn't play great, but I don't necessarily think that it's any worse or any better than last year. Like, I just think this is Anthony Hitchens. Like, I don't think that his level of play, like, varies that much. I mean,
I don't think he was this undisciplined, though, as he was last year. I mean, he was shooting, well, like, the same gap that Lee was supposed to be taking on a few different
look,
runs.
I mean, I think that, I mean, I saw Sean Lee do that, too. You know, like, in this game.
Well, that's probably rust, though,
too. In this game, you know, I saw, like, on Carlos Hyde's big run that set them up, what, probably the most, you know, the point when the Cowboys were at their closest to being scared that this was going to turn into a game was that drive that ended with the DeMarcus Lawrence strip sack. And like the play that happened two before that was a 12-yard run by Carlos Hyde where Lee overran the hole and he got blocked. And then it happened like two drives later, the exact same thing. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're both kind of dealing with – I think the fits are better. But I think that may have more to do with just the fact that at least they're lining up correctly because Lee's getting them lined up correctly. But I still think that there's some work to do on getting the linebackers getting the fits all the time. I mean, Lee made a couple plays, but he still wasn't like – quite at Sean Lee level at that game. And Hitchens, you know, like, look, there was one play, you know, he's still taking on blocks with his shoulder. And there's one play where he got a really great tackle for loss doing that. But there was also two or three plays where he got driven out of the play because he can't disengage with his shoulder. And so, you know, I think that they're going to get...
He's just not a middle linebacker.
Yeah, he's not a middle linebacker. I think he's a good linebacker. I just think that, like... I just think that people's expectations for him are weird to me. They're just weird to me because it's like... to me, I feel like we've gotten Anthony Hitchens' level of play since he came onto the field. You know, like, since he was a rookie. I think then we were shocked by how good he was because... he was as good as he is now then, you know, or maybe just a slightly, you know.
See, that's what I'll disagree with you, though, because I've seen him play significantly better than this. I've seen him be more disciplined. I think he's a much better player than what we saw on Sunday. Now, do I think he's a great player? Absolutely not. But I wouldn't even consider his play on Sunday average. And I've seen him play
it was below average for him, for sure. I'm just saying that I think that his variance is not very wide. Like, I think his best play is really not that far from his worst play. And I don't think that's necessarily – that's not a slight. I think that's – you know, you're getting an above-average linebacker in the NFL most of the weeks. And that's great. That's fantastic. I'm certainly not poo-pooing that. The problem is when people think that he's, you know, a Pro Bowl linebacker. He's not a Pro Bowl linebacker. Like, he's just – he's not. He's probably better than an average linebacker, and he will give you that 90% of the time when he's healthy. But I just don't know that, like, I've seen him reach, you know, amazing heights before as, you know, this as some sort of phenom linebacker. He's very good when he's on, but he's not great. And I think people are expecting him to be great, and that's not what's going to happen.
Really quickly. He's a free agent after the season. Is he a guy that you would sign, or would you let him leave in free agency?
I kind of think I would sign him. I think I'd see what he wants.
You just hate Anthony Hitchens.
Like, because I think, you know, I value above average linebackers, you know? Like, I value a guy who knows our system. I value a guy who, you know, has all the qualities that Hitchens has, except he just, you know, he's has some shortcomings that he can't overcome, and that's fine. I think you don't just poo-poo a guy because he has some shortcomings. Like, you take him as a whole, and I think that depending on what the price is, I mean, if he gets paid a lot of money, then no, I don't want it. But depending on what the price is, I would see what he costs, because I think that he can give you value now. And, you know, Sean Lee isn't going to play forever. And so he might be a guy who could give you a veteran presence at an important linebacker spot while you're trying to find a replacement for Sean Lee. So, I kind of think I would, but I have to see what the numbers look like.
All right, let's pause for a second to talk to you guys about MyBookie. MyBookie has been in the business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so off the bat, you're making money for doing absolutely nothing. And they have the fastest payouts, seriously, just 2 business days. I would only recommend a service that has been great to me, so I'm recommending MyBookie to you guys. Make your way to MyBookie.ag. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go a breeze. You can do live betting. You can bet on the next play, if it's going to be a run or pass, whether they're going to score, the yards they're going to cover. It's fantastic. I really, really urge you guys to check it out. If you join now, MyBookie will match your deposit with an up to 100% bonus. Just use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate that offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, so let's go ahead and dive into some of these defensive linemen. I want to talk about all 3 interior players, Malik Collins, Brian Price, and Richard Ash. Collins played a lot of one technique in this game, and I don't think he played it particularly well. It's just not his skill set to be a one technique. He's a penetrating defensive tackle. He does not hold up very well in the run game. I don't know what the solution is, because they don't have a one technique on the roster. It's pretty clear that they want to play David Irving inside. They don't really want to play him as that right defensive end. So I'm not sure what the answer is. Maybe it is to go to Brian Price and Richard Ash. And I know that you liked a lot of what Richard Ash did on Sunday. So why don't you talk about that kind of rotating spot with the one techniques and with Malik Collins, Ash, and Price.
I mean, I think you're right with Collins. I mean, I think they're trying to make do with a bad situation at this point. I think that he did great when he was given opportunities to give one-on-one with some of these guys inside at one technique. But, you know, I specifically remember a really big, I think it was like a 4-yard tackle for loss that he got, where he basically escorted the center out to the outside and basically tackled the running back around him. It was weird. And that was a really big play. But yeah, I mean, I think when you're talking about like getting him double teamed and taking on double teams and doing the nitty gritty stuff as a one tech, yeah, he's just not really built for that. But the problem is that he's probably still the best built person to do that. That's a starter quality. Now, that leads us to our other conversation about Brian Price and Richard Ash. I like Brian Price. I think that, you know, I feel like every game that I watch, Brian Price does something that I notice him. And he's not playing a ton of snaps. So, I mean, you know, considering...
Yeah, I had him just for 27 snaps this week.
Considering that, you know, we've had three or four of these nose tackles on this team who I could go seasons without ever noticing them. You know,
Nick Hayden.
Yeah, like Nick Hayden. I mean, listen, Hayden did what he did, but I mean, he wasn't ever going to make a play for you, except for the very rare occasion. And then it would shock us so much that we would, you know, break Twitter. but no, I think that you've got something there in Price. And then I think, you know, I noticed Richard Ash multiple times on tape, which is surprising, you know, because, you know, I've seen a little bit of Richard Ash before. I've seen him in training camp, and, you know, we see him.
I think he played last year against Philly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he played some snaps during the regular season, and he played snaps, like, I think he got signed by us or picked up by us and then, like, was playing, like, that week, if I remember correctly, or, like, maybe just the next week or something. He was playing pretty good
now,
snaps.
He has a little bit bigger body than some of those other guys.
He's definitely – him and Price are definitely true one-techs. Like, they definitely have the body type to do it. Now, Price, I think, is still – I think Price is, you know, still a little bit raw. I think he's just so talented physically that he's at his size that he's able to get in there and mix it up and do some things. But I think that where he is struggling is technique and discipline and you know, staying in his gap and staying square and that sort of thing. But Ash looked, I mean, several different times I noticed Ash in the passing game, even giving a little bit of pressure. And yeah, and I thought that he had some pretty good reps. You know, I don't know if the future at that spot is to, you know, make one body out of those two rotating, you know, or what. But I agree that, I mean, unless we're talking about pretty obvious passing downs, like, I don't know that I love Collins as a one technique. I mean, especially if we know that they're going to run, you know, they had good success stopping the run, and maybe they need to do more of this. And I mean, they had some good success when they put both Price and Ash on the field at the same time as tackles. And I know that doesn't really offer you much as in the way of interior pass rush, but I think that, you know, as a first and second down option. Now, the problem is that what happens, and this is something that San Francisco didn't take advantage of that I am a little afraid that Washington will, is no huddle. Is when they start getting into no huddle and start exposing your personnel. So I don't think they have that particular issue solved completely yet, what they're going to do. But I do think that their game plan is to try to make you one-dimensional anyways plays into the fact that they're hoping that they just don't need Malik Collins to play a significant number of run snaps at the one technique.
All right, so let's talk about this really quickly, because I think Collins is a really, really good player. I believe he has the second most sacks ever by defensive tackle before their 22nd birthday. He's a super young, talented player, and I think he needs to be on the field at his true position, the three technique. So what is the best front four combination that you think should be out there on, you know, first down? Is it having Collins play the three technique and potentially moving Irving over to the right side? Is it leaving Collins at the one and then putting Irving at the three? What do you think is the way to get all four of their best players on the field at the same time? That makes sense, at least.
Well, I think, you know, here's the thing. I think that they're more concerned. I think that their first concern is to pair somebody next to DeMarcus Lawrence, who has real talent. And if that's Collins,
I think it's Irving.
Or if it's Irving, I think that's fine for them. I think they like both. I mean, why wouldn't you like both? You liked what Collins was doing the first few weeks. So, I mean, at 3-Tech, working and pairing with
But it certainly looks like they're going with Irving now.
No, absolutely. Because that was my issue. My other thing was that I was going to say is that I still think that there's still something, whether it's still his wrist or whatever, is lingering with Irving that is not allowing him to play on that right side. Because, look, they clearly have made an effort to put Taco on the right side. They've talked about, you know, they put Tyrone Crawford on the right side. They've talked about the idea of them liking the idea of putting somebody with power out there because it's just different than what they've seen. How is David Irving not a perfect fit then as your right defensive end unless there's some kind of injury situation or something that we don't know there? And I tend to think that that's what it is because they played him at almost every single spot except for right defensive end. So in fact, they have played him at every spot except for right defensive end, basically. So I think that that's why he's not playing over there because there's just something going on, you know. And so I think that the thought process then becomes, well, let's, you know, we'll put Crawford out there because at least, you know. And look, to Crawford's credit, he got another sack last week. You know, he's not going to be our 10 sack guy, but he's going out there and he's producing. He's not producing at the level of his pay, but he's not also doing nothing, you know? So I think for them, they found a place where they can just throw Crawford at. He can do some things. He's not going to be the right defensive end that you are necessarily hoping for, but that's okay because you've got DeMarcus Lawrence on the other side doing things that most left defensive ends aren't normally doing. So I think that really the way they have it might be the best situation because you get all the best talent on the field. And by the way, they have it, I mean Crawford as the right defensive end, Collins as the one tech, Irving as the defensive tackle, as the under tackle, and D-Law as the left defensive end. Because I think that you could flop, you know, D-Law and Crawford, and you know, as you rotate those guys in too. But I just think that for what they want to do and how they're trying to get people free, that it may be the best situation for everything except for defending the run. And and I think that, like I said, their defense is more focused on defending in pass situations because they have a belief that their offense is going to put them in a position to mostly be defending passing situations.
All right, let's talk about everybody's favorite whipping boy, Taco Charlton. This was probably his best game of the season. Would you agree with that? Probably?
Probably. I mean, by default, I guess? Yeah.
Well, I thought as a pass rusher, he was better. And actually, there was two different plays that I noticed him. He didn't create the pressure right away, but he was able to get in the throwing lane of Bethard and actually was able to disrupt the throw even despite not getting to the quarterback. So, I mean, those are smart plays of, hey, I'm not going to get to the quarterback. Let me at least block out a target. So I thought he was better there. There was a couple times that he got close to the quarterback. I saw a little bit more power this week. My problem with him was he just didn't play very well against the run. He had one time he got completely fooled on an end around. And then there was another time that on a read option play,
Beathard
kind of stiff-armed him and he went right.
Yeah.
So I would say he's making small improvements. And listen, this is a guy we've talked about a lot. I really think you're going to see a big jump with him in 2018. You probably won't see a big jump this year. And I've told this story before, but when he got to training camp, he was so much further behind than the Cowboys ever anticipated in terms of technique and pass rushing moves. So basically, they've kind of said, okay, hey, go out there, do whatever you're going to try to do, and then we're going to try to fix it this offseason. And that's why you're seeing him go to the spin move so frequently is because he really doesn't have any other moves in his arsenal right now. So he's just trying to use his athleticism and the spin move to create pressure somehow. He's getting better, but I think, like I've been saying all year long, you won't probably see a big jump in the second half of the season. You'll likely see it in 2018. So really quickly, what are your thoughts on Taco in this game?
Well, first off, I mean, let's just take 1 second. How crazy is our 2018 defensive line going to be if all things go well?
Yeah, I know. Well, okay. We should talk about that because there's somebody we need to talk about.
Oh, I mean, every time we talk about him, I get so sad though. It's just so sad, just because it's still so far away. But yeah, I mean, dude, you get Randy back. You get, I mean, if Taco can take a step or two, you got DeMarcus Lawrence. You find yourself a nose tackle. And you've already, I mean, which, you know, that's not.
It might be Price.
It could be Price. It could be Price. And honestly, getting another starting nose tackle is not going to be difficult. It's just, you got to go do it.
No.
You know? But it's just tough to do in season, I think, to get a quality one.
It could be. I heard it still could be Steven Paya. I'll just put that out there. There's a reason why he's on IR and not, they didn't just outright release him. There's a chance it could still be Steven Paya next year.
Next year?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, so, all right, breaking news here by Marcus Mosier. Yeah,
just
what a defense.
The report was he retired, but the Cowboys actually kind of convinced him not to do that yet. So they put him on IR, and they are going to see how he feels after the season.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why, because he's good, man. He's real good.
He's good.
He's not that old. I think he's 30. Is he 30 even?
I don't even think he's 30.
I don't
here.
Even think he's.
Go ahead and talk it all off.
Well, I mean, he's really, really good at specifically what they're asking him to do. Clearly, and I feel really bad because I hope that you guys got an opportunity.
He's 29.
29. Yeah, I feel really bad because I hope you guys got an opportunity to see him do some things before he got hurt, and so that you don't think I'm a liar about talking about all the how good he was doing in training camp, because he was really incredible in training camp, but. Anyways, moving on to guys that are on this team still. Going back to Taco specifically. I've said my piece about Taco a lot. And, you know, I've moved on and it is what it is. He's going to be a long-term project. I'm not as convinced that he's going to take a step next year, like some people think. But I definitely think that I think he will the following year. I guess I'm really surprised by how surprised they were at how little technique he had, because he didn't really show a lot of technique from what I saw. But anyways, we're not going to rehash all that. So, you know, I think at this point, you know, with the DeMontre Moore thing and, you know, look, can we just stop pretending like there wasn't some off-field stuff?
There was.
We don't necessarily need to confirm or deny anything without it being extremely clear that there was an off-field issue just by the clear trail of breadcrumbs all around the place. You know, I mean, just like they suddenly made him inactive and suddenly he got cut. I mean, no, that didn't.
And he suddenly became a worse player than he was a week ago.
No, I don't think so. No. I mean, he went from active and starting and taking snaps to being cut. And it wasn't because he played terribly. You know, there are definitely players who played worse than him. So anyways,
sure.
Now that he's not here anymore, Taco's going to get more snaps. Maybe that helps accelerate things. You know, he seems like a bright kid. He seems like he's going to be a hard worker, and he's going to get it. And I think he has the skill set to be a technician. But the problem is he has no technique. So, like, that's a long process to, you know. I mean, it's not like F.A. Obada long process. But it's, you know. He's played football before, but he, you know, if the way he's going to win in the NFL is using technique, and he has very little technique, that's a steep hill to climb.
Yeah. So let me say something really quick on Taco, and this makes a lot of sense. Taco was talking a couple weeks ago about how he's just not used to playing three or four snaps at a time and then waiting to get back in. He said, you know, at Michigan, he was a 60-snap guy. And, you know, throughout the course of a game, he could kind of figure out offensive tackles and the way that he was going to use athleticism to beat them. I think that's part of the reason why he struggled. Is he just doesn't have the flow yet of, you know, he hasn't played that many snaps. And so I think the Cowboys are probably going to try to up his snap count every single week. They're going to want to see, is he better at the end of a game, you know, with some more snaps. We're going to see. This week I had him down for 38 snaps, and maybe that's why he played a little bit better, because he got a little bit more experience, and he was able to figure out how to beat Joe Staley and Trent Brown. So we'll see. I'm still hopeful for Taco. Really quickly, I just wanted to touch on Byron Jones before we go. He doesn't get enough credit, but he was fantastic again in this game. There were at least four different plays where tight end George Kittle was the primary receiver on a route, and he just absolutely blanketed him. There was one on a play-action bootleg where Kittle came all the way across the field, and there was not even an inch of separation between the two. He's never going to be a big stat guy. He's never going to put up big interception totals, but those type of plays, you know, take away a quarterback's primary route, is the reason why the Cowboys drafted him. I just thought he was fantastic again in this game. He also made a play in the run on a screen pass, came all the way from the free safety spot, drilled the receiver for, I think, a 1 yard loss. I just thought he played an incredible game. So, any quick thoughts on Byron before we head out?
We've heard a lot of talk about people trying to move him to corner, and look, I mean, I understand that. I mean, the things he's doing well are about coverage. But I still think that this is still his best gig. Like, you know, whatever is getting him on tight ends, he's Kittle and Jordan Reed and these kind of guys, like, that's – he's one of the rare kind of athletes who can cover those kind of guys. I mean, Kittle's an incredible athlete. Like, I mean – And definitely one of those more moved tight ends, the receiving tight end types, than like a true hulking beast. Like, he's not Martellus Bennett. Like, this is, you know, this is closer to a Jordan Reed, a Hernandez, a athlete, a bigger wide receiver. You know, that can block, I guess, if you want to call that blocking. But I think that when you think about the kind of guys that are in this division, like with Jordan Reed, like I mentioned, and Zach Ertz, who's really started to come on for Philadelphia, and now, of course, the kid from Ole Miss, Ingram, from the Giants. You know, he's going to have an important role immediately in six games out of the year, and then whichever other teams have, you know, top receiving threats at tight end, which is a lot of teams. So I think that whether you're playing him at whatever you want to call the position, I think he needs to play inside, and I think he needs to play, continue to cover tight ends and play tight ends, because he clearly has a knack for that. And he, you know, every once in a while, you throw him on a slot receiver. You can throw him on a running back. I mean, he can cover basically anybody, but I think he just, like, specifically has a rare skill set for covering those kind of uncoverable tight ends.
Yeah, I remember last year they played him against Randall Cobb, and then the following week they played him against A.J. Green, and he was fantastic in both games. Yeah. So his versatility is the reason his versatility and athleticism the reason why the Cowboys drafted him so high. So that's it for today's show. This edition of the Locked On Cowboys podcast was brought to you by MyBookie.ag. Get into all the action with MyBookie. Whether match your deposit with an up to 100% bonus, just use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. And make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Hit us up with a 5-star review. Leave a review in your Twitter handle, and you'll be eligible to win a free Pro Football Focus Edge subscription. We'll be back on Friday to preview the Cowboys game against the Washington Redskins. Make sure you guys tune in for that. We'll see you guys right back here tomorrow.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.